Hello and welcome to another episode of the Preferred Walk-Ons podcast. This is Michael McGraw here with Michael Schutt. We are recording this separately online because he has been arrested for celebrating too hard with his NC State Wolfpack, making the Final Four, going from down double digits in the first game of the ACC tournament against Louisville, and then needing a miracle and a missed free throw from UVA's best shooter to win that game. 5 wins in 5 days. And now they are going to Arizona for the Final Four, having beaten Duke, arch rival. How are you feeling?
Genuinely don't even, like, before we got on here, I was thinking about how I could sum it up. And I don't have words that I feel like adequately express how I feel. And I think, like, UVA fans will understand. Like, I know you understand. You know, you think back to 2019, and in a different way, there was a magic to that for you guys, just based on the way the previous year had ended. This is more of, yes, it's about the long wait, but then you think about, you know, like you said, like, down to Louisville on Tuesday, the ACC tournament, double digits, losing 4 straight to end the regular season. Like, I don't know. At no point did I think that this was, like, an outcome that felt likely. Did I think it could happen? Like, I've told you all the way through, like, we get into the ACC tournament, I said, like, this team could make a run. And then I felt we could make a run in the NCAA tournament. Did it ever feel likely, though? No. And the way it's happened has been kind of wild, right? I mean, like you said, a couple of things in the ACC tournament, like the Virginia win obviously sticks out as, like, needed a miracle, right? Needed a, what, 85% free throw shooter to miss the front end of a 1-1. But then these tournament games, they've largely led, you know, the Duke game, obviously yesterday, like, they were down at half and had to come back a little bit there. But yeah, this whole thing has just been, it's just been crazy.
Yeah, I think UVA fans can relate to some extent. We talked about this yesterday. I remember being extremely emotional right after the Purdue game in the Elite Eight, and was so excited for the team. It felt like that was it, regardless. You know, everything was gravy at that point that they had made the Final Four. And then I immediately shifted my emotions to just, like, confusion almost. I was like, what is this? I didn't know this was a possible thing. I've grown up my whole life. They had never been to the Final Four. I didn't know that a team I rooted for could be there. And, like, what do I do now? What do I do with my hands? You know, like, I just did have no clue what that even felt like. And then, you know, from your perspective, though, like, NC State's run is so improbable, like, compared to UVA's, which, you know, even though they had the 16-1 loss the year before, where they were a 1 seed in the tournament. So, like, you know, they did what they were supposed to do. NC State has not done what they're supposed to do. They've gotten a little bit of luck along the way. Didn't have to play Kentucky, but they have been solidly beating every team along the way. I mean, coming back from being down at the half, they dominated Duke yesterday in the second half, shot over 70%, held Duke to 33% in the second half. And it just never seemed close. I mean, we watched the game together, and I know you didn't want any negative vibes from me just saying, like, this game is over. But this game was over. This game was over right after the technical foul that got called on Keats. Like, if Duke was going to make a run or a push, it was going to be right after that. And NC State had an answer for everything. They had an answer for Duke's ball pressure, their trapping in the backcourt, made free throws, made timely shots. They deserve it. They deserve it. It's a really cool story.
Yeah, and it feels good that it hasn't been fluky. Right. Like you said, there's always some luck involved. And I hate to keep harping on this one thing, but the luckiest thing has been the McNeely missed free throw. And so yeah, things have to kind of break your way. Yeah, appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, obviously in hindsight now, like, in the moment, I don't like saying, oh, this game is done, like, we've won, you know. But in hindsight, you're totally right. And I think based on what the team is kind of saying, they felt like it was done at halftime, which is so interesting. They were down, but they were in that locker room at halftime saying, like, oh, we're going to win this game, because they had a terrible first half shooting the ball, but still were in the game and were getting all the shots they wanted. They were frustrating Duke defensively. you pointed it out, like Duke kind of stopped running its sets. And the interesting thing was, in kind of looking at it and seeing what Shire said and kind of rewatching parts of the game this morning, Duke was trying to target DJ Burns, like teams have done in the past, with a lot of screens and just trying to make pull him out more. But Kevin Keats, the big defensive adjustment they've made is they're not extending their defense out quite as far. And that kind of gums up the space. So there isn't really that room to work around DJ Burns. He has to cover less ground. And I think that has been a huge key, as well as like in any kind of postseason run, you're getting other dudes who step up, who are playing above and beyond what they did during the regular season. But yeah, I mean, it's the way they're playing right now, like it's hard to imagine them losing. And I hate to even say that, but like I even going into yesterday, I was just like, I just can't imagine this not turning out well. And they're going to have a challenge in the Final Four. I mean, it's the damn Final Four. It's going to be hard, right? But like you look at the last couple of games and like Marquette chose to double DJ Burns a lot. He had 7 assists in that game and other dudes stepped up. Duke chose to play one-on-one for most of the game. They doubled a little bit late, but he had 29 points. Like, pick your poison, man. You can't, there's not a good way to handle this guy right now. And he's the engine. He's the straw that stirs the drink for us. And it's just been a ton of fun to watch.
I'm surprised more coaches have not tried mixing it up a little bit. So like UVA was generally successful in regulation in the ACC tournament game by just playing straight up against Burns, mm-hmm. staying connected to shooters and just refusing to hit threes. Once overtime happened, that strategy didn't work because I think they were all worn down at the end of it and Burns scored a bunch of points. But it should have worked had that three-pointer from O'Connell not go in. Last night, Duke kind of did the same thing pretty much, but it at no point was working. I mean, DJ Burns was the offense for most of this game, and it ended up with situations where Mark Mitchell, Ryan Young are guarding Burns and just obviously could not do it. And I'm surprised that there aren't more, like, sometimes it's a double, sometimes it's straight up, to try to confuse, to try to, you know, get people in passing lanes. It seemed like a mistake from Shire's perspective. I mean, I don't want to criticize after the fact, but like when you got a guy who's scoring 29 points, he's the whole offense. I really think you got to try something else. Like Ryan Young just not going to be able to guard DJ Burns. And it'll be interesting to see what Purdue does, because Purdue is known for kind of having many complicated sets offensively and can mix it up a little bit defensively. I don't know what the matchup against Zach Edey is going to look like. It's, you know, two different people in terms of their style of play in the post. So that'll be a great matchup. But I kind of feel like you have to throw some wrenches at them to try to keep them off balance.
Yeah, I think, you know, like I mentioned, yeah, Duke, a little bit of double teaming in the second half. And when they first did it, things looked out of whack. I think you have to show him different looks. You have to, like you're saying, you got to mix it up. You can't let the NC State offense kind of get in a rhythm. I mean, that's true, right, of any team. But a team right now that is just on a run like this, you've got to, like, knock them off their heels a little bit. And I look, Purdue worries me. I mean, the Zach Edey matchup, like, I have no doubt that Zach Edey can handle DJ Burns one-on-one. You know, that's going to be tough. I think the key is, can you get him in foul trouble early? It's going to be super fascinating to see how they officiate those two, because they're the two probably worst officiated players in college basketball. Like I think refs just struggle with it. You know, like I can be a homer, but I do understand the complaints people have about DJ Burns and things he gets away with. But I also think there's things that people get away with against him. And same with Zach Edey. So it'll be interesting to watch. I think it's going to come down to the thing that college basketball and just basketball in general tends to come down to a lot, which is shooters. Are shooters hitting for both teams? You know, like Purdue has been much improved shooting the three this year from last year, and NC State has been much improved in this run in terms of their ability to hit threes. And so what that looks like, I think, will dictate what happens on Saturday in terms of win-loss. But I think the key here, like, I think you have to go at Zach Edey. I think you can't be afraid of him. I think you have to just, DJ Burns' touch, his footwork is going to be critical. And I'm, like I said, in trying to create foul trouble.
My proposal for this is, as I said yesterday, I think if they play one-on-one in the post, so no double teaming, no switching, no, you know, playing zone or something like that. If Burns is guarding Edie and Edie is guarding Burns, both of them should be able to do whatever they want. No fouls called. Let both of them shove, push, get away with everything. Don't even worry about foul trouble. Nobody wants to see either one of these guys get fouled out. They're like the two most interesting people in the tournament. Let them play. Everybody agrees to it beforehand, and like, let's just throw down, man. Let's go. That's what everybody wants to see.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Yeah, I mean, I would love to see them just be able to like go to war. I mean, I think on the when Purdue has the ball, I wouldn't be surprised to see some Mo Diarra on Zach Edey as well. At times, you're gonna see Ben Middlebrooks get a shot at him when Burns is getting a break. It's going to be fascinating to see how you deal. They haven't really had to deal with, obviously, somebody of that size. You just don't really deal with somebody other than him. I liked what they did against Filipowski yesterday. Obviously, he's different from Edie, but just another talented big. You know, you think back to the ACC tournament and they handled Baycott really well. I think there is history there. There's evidence over the course of the year to suggest that NC State can handle a dominant interior presence. But I mean, if Edie looks the way he did yesterday, where he put up 40 and 16 or whatever, like that's going to be tough, right? If he's playing really, really, if he's playing that well, it does concern me. But, you know, it's weird how I feel like I'm occupying this space right now of like in between just, I'm just thrilled to be there, but also like, hold on now. It kind of feels like we have a chance to win this thing. So, like, it's weird. I don't know. I'm going to be fine if we just go out and lose. But like, it does feel like now you're right there and you got that chance.
Yeah, not a lot of luck for the 11 seeds that have made the Final Four, NC State now becoming the sixth team to do that. But, you know, there are some examples in there of kind of random close calls. I mean, UCLA lost to Gonzaga on a half quarter. Otherwise, that game would have been in overtime. So why not? Why not you? Keep competing.
Why not us? Why not us? And yeah, it's just it's amazing, man. This has been so cool, and this is what this is all about, right? Like, even if you don't like NC State or whatever, this is why the tournament is so great. You never know what's going to happen, and you know, UConn being there, Purdue being there, I guess fairly predictable. Alabama not nearly as big of a like Cinderella as NC State, but they're a four seed. It's not like the expectation was they would be in the Final Four. So I think this whole thing is setting up to be fun. I'm excited to see what happens in Phoenix next weekend.
As you know, I've never been a NC State fan. I really liked this team. I liked getting to know them at the ACC tournament. I'm obviously happy for you, but NC State's always just been the most neutral ACC opponent for me as a Virginia fan. Mm-hmm. I've been 100% rooting for them and just enjoying, like, this past weekend was great. Like, the only thing better than having my team in it is having a situation where North Carolina fans are just miserable. Their team loses. They don't get to go to the Final Four. And then they have to watch their two most hated rivals play each other with a guaranteed spot on the Final Four happening. Like, that is perfect. Perfect weekend. No notes. Love it. Love that North Carolina's gotten bounced, even though I'm not a huge Alabama fan and not a huge Nate Oates fan. He kind of strikes me as the monorail salesman from The Simpsons. Like, he just it seems like some kind of huckster, and I don't know what he's selling, but I'm excited that UNC is out and already starting to see a little bit of chirpiness from UNC fans about Hubert Davis, which seems inevitable. Like, guy got to the championship, knocked Duke, ended Coach K's career, almost won the finals, but since they didn't make the tournament, then short of a Final Four with a team this good and this experienced this year, a lot of upset fans.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's been kind of the thing, right? Is like, making it further than Carolina was always going to be that to me, that was like kind of the goal. Like, can Carolina get upset and can we get a little far, you know, just to make that happen? No, I mean, it's crazy there. I saw some Carolina fans getting real chesty on Twitter today about like about Duke losing. Right. And they were just like, you guys were the preseason favorites and you lost to NC State. It's like, do you guys not remember last year when you were the preseason favorites and didn't make the tournament? Like, it's crazy to me. But like, if we're going to start calling for Hubert Davis's job, I think that's pretty insane fandom. I don't know, man. It's, he clearly is a good, they have a good one. He's a good coach. And they ran into, you know, a tough draw. Like, it's a tournament. Things happen, right? Like, Duke, same deal. Like, you played really well. And, you know, you got to a point where you came up short. And I don't know. I personally am loving it. This, like, especially from the Carolina perspective, they love to call State their little brother. So it's kind of nice now to go from little brother to only child. We're the only ones left. So sorry about it. Just go. They can't even, like, what are they going to tell us? It used to be, you know, when we beat them in football, they'd say, wait till basketball season. Then we beat them in basketball. And, you know, sometimes they'd say, wait till football season next. Like, you can't beat them in anything now. So, like,
where's your lacrosse team?
Right. I mean, there you go. Maybe they're going to start talking crap about baseball. Like, I don't know. It's so sweet. It is so, so sweet to have this win against Duke. And then you're further than Carolina, you know, like the whole thing. That's the part that I feel like almost every other ACC fan can get behind State, because they're like, oh, cool. They beat the bad guys. So
that's right. I do want to briefly just talk about UConn, which seems inevitable at this point. Like, if NC State wins the whole thing and has gone through UConn, then truly it will be the most miracle of runs ever, because UConn is just destroying everybody. They have a roster of five people who are probably going to get drafted in the NBA draft. Just absolutely running teams. It was a really competitive game against Illinois, who had the best offense in the country. And then a 30-0 run just ended the game. Everyone wanted to jump on that. Hey, this team hasn't scored in however many minutes meme with UVA. How about Illinois also running into a, it's been 50 actual minutes since they scored a basket because UConn was just running them out of the gym. I do agree with Dan Hurley a little bit. The fact is, if this was Duke or Carolina, they would be on nonstop getting full on coverage. And somehow they seem like disrespected as the overall one seed, the repeating national champions, like the contending national champions. He has an absolute leviathan of a team, and I don't really see how anybody's going to stop them.
I agree with you. I think that they are pretty unstoppable. I mean, I think like all you can do is hope they have, I don't know, like they have an off night. You could sit here and say, like, this is the thing about them. You can say with a lot of teams, well, we need them to have a cold shooting night. Against Illinois, they shot 3-for-17 from three. They were 17%. Like, that is a cold shooting night. It's about as cold as it gets. But they don't have to rely on outside shooting to beat you. And so Tristan Newton and Cam Spencer are like their best shooters. And those guys did not have great games against Illinois. But I mean, Klingon is a beast inside. They're so well-rounded. I don't see a weakness. And it is scary as you kind of think about, like, you know, a potential, I mean, that would be a national title matchup if we were to make it to there. But no matter who they're playing, it just seems right now like they are an unstoppable force, which isn't terribly surprising. Like, that's kind of what most people were saying going into the tournament. So they're doing what they're supposed to do, and it's going to take them like tripping up, right? But I just don't, like I said, I just don't see a weakness when it comes to kind of like looking for a way to beat them.
Given how well everybody's playing, like, there isn't, like, NC State is a underdog story, but they're clearly playing very well. They played well at the end of the season, like through the ACC tournament. They're not like Loyola or George Mason or some, mid-major school. Everybody in the Final Four is pretty decent, and the lines for the games are huge. So Purdue is a 9.5-point favorite against NC State. It seems crazy to me that the line's that big. I know Purdue's been playing really, really well, but like that seems like too many points. And then UConn is an 11.5-point favorite against Alabama, which seems crazy given how much offense Alabama has. Like, you would think that they're just going to keep scoring. But I don't know how you don't take Connecticut in that situation. Like, how do you, like, can you really lay 11.5 points in a Final Four game against two major programs? I don't know.
Yeah, it seems, I don't love it. It almost feels like I'm going to counter exactly what I just said. I'm going to contradict myself. But while I don't see a weakness in UConn, I have a hard time. I don't know. Like, maybe it's time for them to slip up. Like, it feels too good to be true. Are they really just going to blow everybody out on their way? Or are we watching, you know, the most dominant tournament run that we've seen in our lifetime? Like, it's possible that that's true. But like you said, against Alabama, it feels like Alabama's going to be able to produce enough offensively to kind of hang in there. Like, it's going to be a clash of styles, right? I mean, UConn plays at a pretty slow tempo, and Bama obviously doesn't. That one is interesting. It's going to be, to me, like, who can dictate the pace of the game? Who can make that game look like the style they want to play? And if Alabama was able to speed them up, you know, that we have some evidence. UConn only lost three games, but like Creighton kind of did that to them back in February. You know, Seton Hall played a little more up-tempo game against them when they beat them in December. So maybe that's the key. If there is a key, you kind of have to go for that. And, you know, similar to Purdue, hope you can get clinging in foul trouble or something like that to give yourself a chance. Maybe it is going to be, like, as much as I hate to say it, maybe Purdue covers it too. Maybe we see two kind of clunkers of games and have a Purdue-UConn final that's a little chalky, but it would be a good game. I mean, I'd certainly watch that battle inside.
Yeah, I think with how much Klingon impacts shooters around the rim, and that was something Brad Underwood talked about during the game when he got interviewed by a sideline reporter. He was basically like, hey, if Klingon's going to block 20 shots, he's going to block them all, fine. We got to keep shooting them. So he's clearly impacting them around the rim. I think the only way you can beat this kind of UConn team is to hit a bunch of threes. I think that's just it. Like, you have to be able to match them. You're not going to be able to match their physicality inside. You have to be able to hit shots. And Alabama does have players that are capable of doing that. But when that's your strategy going into a game, it's kind of hard to, you know, both teams know that that's what you need to do. They can pressure you out a little bit more and make it difficult. And Dan Hurley is one of the best in the business at game planning against a team when he has enough time to do it. I mean, their run last year, the closest game they had was in the Final Four against Miami, which was a 13-point win. Their second closest was the second round game against St. Mary's, a 15-point win. So, I mean, it's very possible that they're just going to repeat their absolute dominance through the tournament like they did last year. I think for Purdue, NC State, I'm going to take NC State in the points. I don't know. I feel like Purdue's going to win the game, but I think it's going to be a nail-biting, close game. And, you know, Purdue fans have, like, been really locked into rewriting their history this year. They had the whole 116 loss last year. They've had many consecutive losses under Matt Painter against double-digit seeds. And what do you know? You think you've gotten past it, and you're in the Final Four, and here comes another double-digit seed just sitting right there. You're a heavy favorite. I think there are going to be some dicey moments based on just how well NC State's playing. I mean, they have multiple people that can beat you. They're not reliant on one particular player. So I think it'll be a close game. I do think Purdue will ultimately pull it out, but I feel like that's the game that we're going to see. We're going to see something interesting down the stretch.
I agree. I was actually thinking about this a little bit last night after the Duke game ended. In this run, I mean, you've got the shot to go to overtime in the ACC semis. But other than that, what is this run missing? It's missing like a buzzer beater win. And I don't know that they get it, but I feel like there's going to, that my gut feeling is I'm with you. I think there's going to be a chance for that against Purdue. I think I see that game ending on a last second shot. And I don't know if it goes in. I don't know what the result of it is. I just, for whatever reason, I have a gut feeling that it's going to come down to a last possession. And, you know, I know how I hope it ends, but like, I don't know. There's a feeling there, and I know that it's a stupid like vibes thing. We were kind of joking about that before we started, but like it just kind of feels like something like that is loading. Yeah, I mean, they're going to keep themselves in the game. Like anytime you see a double digit seed make a run in the tournament like this, you know, we talk about confidence and they always say like, oh yeah, we think we belong here. But this NC State team is as confident as any team I've ever seen. I mean, like they just, for them, it's like, yeah, I mean, nothing has changed. We just, things are clicking a little bit better and here we are. And they seem like they belong. And I think it'll be a really good competitive game. And I'll tell you what, Alabama plays with a lot of confidence too. So UConn can't sleepwalk through their game. Like, I don't think they will. I don't think they ever do. But I'm hoping for two really good games. But I feel like the UConn game might be out of hand.
It was a doubly exciting day for you yesterday because the NC State women also punched a ticket to the Final Four, which was very cool, despite the fact that, again, some shenanigans around their game. First, the Chattanooga ref, as we detailed last week, and then the court painting, the painting of the court. They did not get it right, the three-point line. I mean, you have like people, great video of the coaches just kind of like stepping off with, you know, their heel to toe, being like, yeah, no, that's not how that looks. Like what a bad look for the NCAA, particularly that it happened on the women's side. Like there's no chance of that happening on the men's side. There's no way that would have happened on the men's side. So really bad look. It's already been detailed in the past about how accommodations at March Madness site for women have been bad in the past, and like the weight rooms and all the other stuff that like they've tried to do work to show that they care, and just a really horrible look. But that aside, a great win for NC State. And tonight, we're recording this on April 1st, maybe the most exciting night of women's basketball, maybe ever. I mean, we've got the rematch of the national championship with Iowa and LSU. Got Caitlin Clark against Angel Reese again. Haley Van Lith is very popular. Kim Mulkey, her story came out in the Washington Post. You got all that swirling. And then the other game, you've got UConn, perennial champions all the time. Paige Beckers playing out of her mind, finally living up to that mantle after all the injuries she's gone through. And you got the most exciting freshman in the country in Juju Watkins for USC. So awesome games back to back tonight.
Yeah, I mean, what a time for women's college basketball. And like you said, it's a real shame to see it marred by just a total lack of professionalism in, it wasn't even close. It was 9 inches off. Like, that's just not even like, I don't know. I mean, somebody's got to lose their job over that. And I hate that for them, but like, do your job. Just absolutely crazy to me that you have almost a foot difference in the 3-point line from the top of the key. They said the sides were accurate, but just the top of the key. Good thing nobody ever shoots from there. Yeah. But yeah, no, I mean, huge win for NC State's women. Super excited about them going to the Final Four as well. They just have a deadly backcourt with Sanaya Rivers and Isaiah James. And I just really like that team, like what Westmore has built there. Tough game yesterday against Texas with Madison Booker, Big 12 Player of the Year. I'm, you know, South Carolina gives the same vibes as the UConn men of like, they seem kind of unstoppable. I just feel like they will be in competitive games and then they make a run. And teams like Oregon State felt this way yesterday. They would kind of close the gap a little bit and then South Carolina pulls away. And it just kind of feels like they're going to be pretty much impossible to beat. But this LSU-Iowa game tonight, I am real pumped to see it. I mean, I don't know what to expect. Caitlin Clark hasn't been shooting as well by her standards right recently. So if she can get going, I think Iowa, pretty tough to beat. You know, and then you've got like you said, Juju Watkins on the other side also not scoring at quite the same clip she was in the regular season. So if the stars can get going, it's just, this is going to be, I'm really excited to watch some really good women's basketball tonight, and sets up probably an awesome Final Four.
I don't think that there's ever been, I mean, what's great about it is that the stars have propelled their teams into the tournament. Like, it is not just, wow, we're trying to find storylines. Like, the storylines that everybody wants to see have advanced their teams at least to the Elite Eight, and now playing for the Final Four tonight. So it will be probably two of the most watched basketball games for women ever, and then I'm sure that will be eclipsed whenever they get to the Final Four or the championship. So yeah, should be a fun matchup. I look forward to talking about it next week. Any final thoughts on this past weekend? Any more crimes that you're going to do as you're still in celebration mode?
To be clear, I don't think I actually have committed any crimes yet. But
that's right.
No, I'm in my that confusion, that bewildered stage of celebration where I'm just kind of, I don't know, today's April Fool's Day. I've been kind of looking for like somehow this has been a joke. I've been pranked. Yeah, I don't know, man. I just, I'm going to bask in it a little bit. I'm probably going to rewatch some stuff, but I am just still baffled and don't know what to do with myself.
Speaking of April Fool's Day, today has been really, really difficult to be on social media. Of course, we're on social media at PWO Pod on Instagram and X, but it has been a lot of actual people that are pretty big joining the transfer portal, and that's terrible. Like, they can't do that on April Fool's, because there are also just as many accounts out there that are like, oh, turns out Tony Bennett's going to retire and turn in his national championship trophy. He never wanted it. And it's like, but they're like real people. Like, FAU's 7'1" center just entered the transfer portal like a few minutes ago, and how am I supposed to keep track of all this?
You know, you just wait and you check it tomorrow, and then you find out what's real and what's not. You don't get instant gratification all the time. I did see the Tony Bennett retirement April Fool's prank, and it did, for a brief second, it got our friend Clay. He gasped and then realized what day it was.
See, that makes it all worth it to me.